the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, retirement is more than just a number. We don't want you to die broke. And there's been a new study that's been released by the Employee Benefit Research Institute. It says 40% of households will run short of income when it comes to their own retirement. So obviously, there is a number involved in what you need to retire on. What is that number? And the real answer to that is it's a lot different than anything you ever thought of. It's not necessarily a particular number like a lot of people are trying to sell in TV ads. It's actually more of a journey to get there. And that's what we're going to discuss today.
And the reason that we want to talk about this, John, every single year, obviously with 10,000 of us boomers heading into retirement every day, retirement has become a big issue because it impacts the government in terms of Medicare spending, Social Security. It impacts the economy because if people can't retire, they stay in the workforce longer. So that obviously has an impact on the labor force. Basically, John, what our industry is focused on for so many years has been coming up with a number, a single number that says, hey, if you achieve this number, you're going to live happily ever after into the sunset in retirement. And what they do is they try to compute a number. And then once you arrive at that number, you take out what is called a withdrawal rate. So let's assume, just to make this easy for math and radio, let's assume that number's $1 million. Now, the number that has been used historically over the last two decades is you take out 4% a year. So on $1 million, you would take out $40,000. And technically, that should last you 25 years. The problem is these numbers no longer work anymore because so much has changed in the environment, and we're going to get into why retirement is not just a number. It involves a process, and it's much, much more complex than that.
But Jim, this is what I was talking about earlier. You know, there are a lot of, I get them all the time in the mail here. We give you this free dinner, gourmet dinner, if you come here and hear our retirement plan. And these things seem to be more plug-in types of situations. Then there are these robo-advisors, you know, Siri, tell me what I have to do to retire. You're hosed.
or how about Alexa? You know, let's go to the Amazon Echo. Alexa, what do I need to do? What's my number?
You are beyond hope. Anyway, so obviously it's more than that, right?
Well, here's the problem with any kind of retirement plan or any kind of retirement calculator. They all make a projection. Now, how do they get to that projection? Well, they're making a lot of assumptions. For example, they're going to take your current age and the age at which you retire. So if you're age 25, you want to retire at age 65, you got 40 years to accumulate, and they take your expenses. They want to know what your income is. They want to know how much you're saving, how much you're contributing to, let's say, a retirement program, or how much money you're setting aside, and then your retirement date. So, you know, you can do this at any age. Plug in the number. You can be 25, 35, 45, or 55. Obviously, the older you are, the higher that number is going to be because you have fewer years to save. Then what it does, John, it spits out a number. It says, well, if you're age 25 and you want to retire on $5,000 a month of income, you're going to have X amount of dollars when you reach age 65. The whole problem, though, is in the assumptions. And that's where all of this goes awry with retirement planning, because look how much the world has changed today compared to, let's say, the world that existed 10, 15, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago.
But you know, it's the idea about searching for security. Well, it's like an economic forecast. You know, you basically plug in all these values into a spreadsheet and out pops a number. And that number may not be connected with reality or connected with events today in investing markets. But nevertheless, it gives you some kind of a false sense of security because there's the magic number.
Oh, and it came from a computer, so it must be true. But here's the problem with any kind of retirement program, and that's why you have to run Monte Carlo assumptions. You have to do multiple scenario outcomes because nobody knows what the future is going to be. You don't know what your health is going to be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now. I mean, if you just take a look at the average statistics today, a male age 65 is expected to live to age 84. A woman age 65 is expected to live to age 87. And here's something that we're seeing more of, and this percentage, by the way, keeps increasing. 25% of all of you that are age 65 stand a 25% chance of living to age 90, and 10% of you at age 65 stand a 10% chance of living past 95. I mean, how many centenarians do we have today? I mean, it's remarkable, but that number keeps going up. So a lot of these retirement programs or these numbers that they give you don't account for longevity. That's a big factor. Another thing that these programs don't account for is they don't account for market changes. I mean, assume, for example, that you retired in the year 2000. And let's say you put 60% of your money in stocks or 60% in bonds, 40% in fixed income, and you went into mutual funds. Well, let's take that forward. And none of those computer programs could foresee what would happen to the stock market for the next 13 years, from the year 2000 to the year 2013. Actually, April 2013, the stock market went virtually nowhere. You earn zip, nothing. In fact, during that interlude between those 13-year periods, there were two bear markets that took the market down by 45%. In other words, you could have lost half your assets between the year 2000 and 2002, and you could have lost half your assets again between 2007 and 2009. The other thing it didn't take into account is what would happen to interest rates between the year 2000 and the year 2016. You've gone from 8% interest that you could get on safe investments to 1.5% to 0% on investments. So you take a look at these examples of people that invested, and you had these assumptions that were made in terms of what your returns were going to be, and those returns were based on historical models. John, how many people have you talked to on the gym still can't believe the situation that we're in today, where actually when you thought interest rates couldn't go lower, they actually did, or the fact that the stock market would go 13 years? How many of your friends that you talk to or people at the gym after the financial crisis ended in March of 2009 put their money back in the stock market?
No, and they keep looking backwards to try to figure out what to do in the future. In other words, they're looking in the rearview mirror and the situations are changing again. And a lot of times it's fear that keeps it there. But that's the way people tend to operate.
Yeah. So all those assumptions that you made about your retirement, let's say going back to the year 2000, or you could have gone back to the year 2005, or heck, go back to 2010. Just go back to the beginning of this decade in 2011. And those programs are based on historical averages. That's great, unless you're living in unhistorical times or historical times, depending on how you want to look at it, in the world that we live in today, where you have 0% interest rates, negative percent interest rates, and the stock market is in a much different situation today. We're no longer talking about a cheap stock market. So that's the thing that doesn't go into these programs. They're designed to spit out a number. It's sort of like the beginning of taking a trip. But you know, if you're going on a trip, you're following your GPS, you're going to be taking different roads, different highways to eventually get you to your destination. And that's what this number should be in any kind of program. If you're listening to this program, you got a robo-advisor, you had a financial plan, and you got this number. That number should be the starting point of reference of what your retirement is going to look like. And you should be talking to your advisor and saying, all right, that's a good number to begin with, but let's take a look at realistically of where we stand today, where the markets are, where interest rates are, what longevity is in my family, what health is, where I want to live. All these things have to go in. So the number that everybody talks about, John, is nothing more than a starting point for conversation.
Well, although people would like to suppress the business cycle or believe that it doesn't exist, it would seem like the timing of your retirement is also important, because it would have to depend on market facts. Because remember, people who were retiring back in 2000, we were just right at the tail end of the internet bubble, which went kapop starting around 1998 into 2000. Up until that point, everybody was going to be making 15% in retirement off your investments, and the sky was the limit. Well, everybody got a railroad awakening in that one between 2000 and 2002. And then, okay, we went back to, quote, normal, because another bubble came up. That was the housing market and bad loans. Another rude awakening between 2007 and 2009. So it really seems like the timing of your retirement is important as well. And you have to anticipate the market's going to go through these cycles.
Oh, they're not only going to be going through these cycles, but it makes a major difference. If you've been listening to this program for the last couple of years, you've heard us talk with experts and John and I on the program that the withdrawal rate that is historically used in these plans has been 4%. John, any idea what the withdrawal rate was? Like when I started my financial planning career back in 1981, when I got my CFP, I was doing retirement planning. Any guess on what we were using as a withdrawal rate back then? Just take a guess.
Now, I may be wrong, but I would guess somewhere around 8 or 9%, I would think.
Pretty close.
Okay.
We were using a 10% withdrawal rate. And the reason we were using that is back in the 80s, you got 12% at the bank and a free toaster and a Vegematic. You got 14% on utility stocks, or 14% in government Ginnie Mae's. You could have got 15% in, let's say, a government treasury, or you got 8 or 9% on a tax-free bond. So the withdrawal rate that we were using in the 80s was 10%. That withdrawal rate today, realistically, is probably closer between 2 and 3%. So the rate of returns and the timing of retirement plays a major, major factor. And also, John, I can remember when I first got into this business, it was the golden years of Social Security. Because if you are on Social Security, you're aware that every single January, the government increases your Social Security check by the amount of the CPI or the inflation. And it hasn't been much lately. I can remember when I first got in the business, I had people that retired that were getting Social Security checks that were just, you know, they were going up at 10, 12, 14% a year in the latter part of the 70s. I mean, imagine getting a double-digit increase every single year from Social Security. And a lot of military pensions, a lot of government pensions were indexed to inflation. And those were the golden years, because the real rate of return was so much higher, because Volcker and Reagan, Volcker brought down inflation. And yet those high interest rates or high real returns persisted for a such longer period of time. So, John, you're absolutely right. The one thing you cannot afford to do, and I think this is one reason why so many people have stayed out of the stock market, is they got hit with two bear markets where stocks lost almost half their value within a 8-year period. They had two bear markets where stocks were down 45%. So when the economy recovered in 2009, a lot of people refrained from going back into the stock market. They stayed in cash or they stayed in bonds. And even worse, if they were in bond funds, they saw their income decline every single year as the dividends from those bond funds declined as interest rates fell due to quantitative easing and all the money printing that we're seeing.
Yeah, so you have to ask about the value of these plans. I mean, I know that you have to start a plan somewhere, but a lot of these plans are based on fixed assumptions. And if the assumptions change upon which they are based, then the plans aren't valuable. But nevertheless, you do have to start somewhere. So this might be a jump-off spot, but I'm assuming there's a lot more to it.
Well, I mean, if you are planning for your retirement, whether you're working with an advisor, and I highly recommend that you have an advisor, and, you know, if you can't afford one, maybe you go with a robo-advisor. But just remember that the number that you come up with is a starting point. And that number should be adjusted working with your advisor, and you're going to adjust your plan as you age. If you're starting out planning and you're 25, all the better. The earlier you start, the better off you're going to be. If you're starting off with a retirement plan, let's say you're not doing it until you're 45 or 50, you're waiting until the kids get out of college, and then you're going to say, okay, we're going to focus on ourselves. So the number that you come up is the starting point. And the thing that you have to understand, and I've been doing this for 36 years now, is what we have found over time is retirement, you can break up into three different phases. The early phase of retirement, depending on your health, could be anywhere from age 60 to age 70. That's the first phase of your retirement. You're still in good health. That's probably when you're going to be spending a lot more money. You're going to take those trips, go around the world, do the stuff you didn't have time to do when you were, let's say, working full time. So now you have all this leisure. You can take off and go to Europe or go someplace, take two or three trips because your health is pretty good. That's what we call phase one. Phase two is generally from age 70 to age 80. In the second phase of your retirement years, that is when you start getting in your 70s, you find out, you know, the jet lag from going on trips, it's a little bit more exhausting on you. You don't take as many trips, so you're spending less money. Your health may not be the best. I just had a client of mine, and we were talking about this very thing, and he was just talking about coming back. They took a trip to China. All the walking, climbing up steps, he said it took them 3 or 4 days to recover from the trip, from the jet lag, he said, we just got tired. He's a doctor. And he was talking about when they first retired, you know, they would go on 3-4 trips a year and they had all this boundless energy. But he was saying, you know, I go to the gym, I work out, I try to keep myself in shape. But he said, I just don't have the energy level at age 74 that I had at age 65. And so that's what we call phase two. You usually spend less money during this phase. The trips are fewer. You stay more around town. If you are taking a trip, it's maybe flying across the country to see the kids. Then you get to what we call the third phase of your retirement. That could be age 80 to into your 90s. Or maybe even your hundreds if you end up being a centenarian. Your expenses are highest in phase three because that's when you're going to be running into medical expenses. And you need to take that into consideration when you're putting together a retirement plan. And as we have talked about here many times in the program, you should be adding $8,000 to $10,000 into your budget, putting it aside in a bank account, a secure investment, because you're going to rely on that money more and more when you get to phase three of your retirement to pay those extra medical bills, the drugs, all the things that you're going to have to end up out of pocket, whether it's increased Medicare insurance. And by the way, Medicare premiums are going up for 1/3 of Medicare recipients by 23%. It was designed to go into effect after the election. You know, I wonder why they did that. So these are the things you're going to have to account for. So this is why you need to monitor your plan over time, because your expenses are going to be different than phase one. They're going to be higher. You'll probably cut back in phase two, and then your expenses are going to rise when you get to phase three, when you're facing more medical expenses, or I hope it never happens, you end up dealing with maybe one of you has to go into a retirement home or gets dementia or Alzheimer and needs, you know, 24-hour care, where you could end up spending $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month. And so that's why these retirement plan numbers really don't make sense. They have to be altered. You have to throw alternate scenarios. What happens if I live this long? What happens if one of us gets sick? What happens if the stock market has a bear market? And also taking a look at the investment environment in which you retire. Anybody that is retiring in 2016, 2017 is living in a much different investment environment than anybody that retired in the year 2000, 2005, or 2010. So plans need to be monitored and they need to be altered over time.
Of all the things you could do for retirement planning, Jim, what would you say has the most impact? You know, you do it and you'll get some results that are really satisfactory.
I would say number one, the earlier that you can start saving for your retirement. Obviously, if you get out of college, you're starting at age 25 and you want to retire at age 65, you've got 40 years to accumulate money for your retirement. So the earlier you start, the longer you're going to have for that money to compound towards your retirement. The second greatest factor on your retirement is how much are you able to save? According to the Employee Benefit Institute that just released this survey, that only 43% of Americans will not make it throughout their retirement without, you know, ending up becoming a ward of the state, their children, or, you know, basically ending up broke, is the amount of money you should save is between 10 and 15% of your income. And I know a lot of you are going to say, that's probably hard to do. But think if you're starting out single, the one thing you can do, the earlier you start, the less money it's going to take. I think we've done a number of calculations that we've shared with you over the years. You're starting out at age 25, depending on whether you have a 401k plan with matching contributions, you put it in the stock market, you know, you may need to save only $100 a month. What person at age 25 can't save $100 a month? And then the third factor, John, is how you invest. The real problem that retirees are having is they've been in the wrong investment since 2009. They've been in bond funds, they've been in cash, or they put all their money in gold, and they stayed out of the stock market when the stock market has had one of its biggest bull runs thanks to all this central bank liquidity. But here's the thing. Next to starting early, the second best thing that you can do is save, and save anywhere from 10 to 15%. Of your money, which I know is pretty hard to do if you're trying to start out a family or coming into a marriage with a lot of student loans.
Okay, so let's talk about solutions, maybe alternatives to the way you've been doing things, because it may slowly dawn upon you that you're one of the 43% of people who are going broke and you don't have the numbers you thought you were going to have.
You know, two of the best things that you can do in this kind of environment where stock market returns are low and interest rates are close to zero is delay retirement. You know, I can remember, John, when I got in the business, people were retiring at age 62, taking their Social Security. They had defined benefit pension plans. You know, you had double-digit interest rates. Those were what we call the golden years for retirement. It's a much different environment. Today, one of the best things you can do is delay your retirement, because number one, your Social Security check is going to be bigger, because at full retirement age, the more you delay it, at least from age 66 to 70, it's going to go up at 8% a year. So delaying retirement. Another thing you can do is work part-time. And there have been a number of studies done that those that work part-time tend to live longer. They're active. They keep their brain active. Even in cases of Alzheimer's and dementia, there's less chance of that because you're keeping your brain active, because 75% of Alzheimer's and dementia is lifestyle, not hereditary factors. So delaying retirement and working part-time. In fact, there was an article that came out in Bloomberg that said that the new trend is for people to work longer, so it's reversing itself. In the year 2006, 15% of individuals age 65 and older were working. By 2015, as of last year, John, that figure had grown to close to 20%. That has a lot of impact in terms of what we're seeing on the participation rate and the job market. So working part-time, number one, that's a fewer amount of years that you're going to have to draw down your assets. It allows your assets, your investments, to accumulate and compound over a longer time. It's going to give you a better quality of life. I mean, they were talking about many individuals who had decided to work because of what it did for their lifestyle. They were able to enjoy things that they weren't able to do had they retired, because they simply wouldn't have the money to take the kind of vacations to Europe or things that they wanted to do. So working part-time, it's a better quality of life. It's also likely that you're going to live longer. And let's put it this way. For experienced workers, the unemployment rate is lower. For individuals age 65 and older, the unemployment rate is 4.1% versus the national average of 5%. So, John, there is a whole list of things that you can do to delay that. But delaying and working part-time is one of the best things you can do. I mean, let's say you could get a part-time job making $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year in retirement. That's equivalent to having a couple extra million in your bank account. I can't think of no faster way to create an asset equivalent income than work. And so delaying retirement and working part-time, John, are very powerful tools that are available to individuals today. And believe it or not, before the age of Social Security, that's what people did.
So first of all, you start with a plan, and probably a good idea is to hire a trusted advisor. The number is just a starting point, and you need to have realistic assumptions in your plan. Now, here's an important one. Remember, all plans need to be flexible to the point that as your needs change or as investment and income conditions change, you need to be able to modify your plan. But at least the plan gives you the structure within which you need to work. So basically, once again, start with a plan, hire an advisor. Remember, it has to be based on realistic numbers, and then the plan is capable of being modified as your needs tend to change. Now, coming up tomorrow on Lifetime Income, Wade Fowle's going to be with us, and he is going to be talking on safer approaches to retirement planning. He's a recognized worldwide expert on this whole subject. Now, we have a real life study, which we do every week on the program. It is a real life study. We simply change the names of the people involved to protect their privacy. And I'm assuming, Jim, it's going to be following the subject matter we have just discussed.
Yeah, this is the case of Ed and Lisa Walker. Ed is age 53. Lisa's age 55. Both of them are working, and the plan is to retire when we started the plan at age 65. Given life expectancy tables, they were between the two of them, we were figuring age 90. In other words, one of them would live to age 90 given the health questionnaire. Their risk tolerance was basically moderately aggressive, and their primary investment objective was to focus on growth for retirement. They wanted to retire. They wanted to have enough money to live on. A little background on Ed and Lisa. Ed, age 53, was a program manager. He was an experienced investor and always had taken a proactive approach to his finances. Ed, however, was diagnosed with cancer 6 months after completing his financial plan. His wife, Lisa, she was age 55. She was a teacher. Lisa returned to teaching, and her concerns were about retirement and also wanted to ensure that each one of her three boys got to graduate from college.
Okay, well, two things, I guess, at this stage of the game. Because you didn't know the cancer was coming along when the plan was made, what were the goals of the retirement plan? And then were you able to morph it? Did that change in any way? And I'm sure it did as a result of the cancer diagnosis.
Well, a couple things. Main concern with Lisa and Ed is paying for college expenses, as any parent with children. Also, legacy planning. In other words, hey, if we grow our estate and build this money for retirement, we'd like to pass that on and preserve that. And then also being able to maximize their retirement. So basically, I mean, if we take a look at where they were in fairly good shape. Their essential budget was $106,000 a year. Discretionary spending was $29,000. So total income of about $135,000. And with rental income, it was up to $159,000. Surplus income of about $24,000 a year. Now, in today's terms, we calculated that their retirement budget would be roughly about $59,000 for essentials, $5,000 for discretionary spending, $64,000 less pension and Social Security at their retirement age. It would be $51,900. They had a shortfall of about a little over $12,000 a year. If we take a look at their assets, let's round it off to say $350,000 in real estate. Their investment assets, joint account, $158,000, Ed's retirement, $365,000, and Lisa's retirement account, roughly about $81,000. So total investment assets of about $604,000, total assets almost close to $1 million, about $949,000, less liabilities that left him with about a net worth of about $800,000. Some of the challenges that we were facing when we started the plan. Lisa did not work for nearly 20 years. She's now a teacher and is contributing to a pension, so that's going to help. All assets were held in the retirement accounts, which have a major tax implication during retirement, because once you reach a certain age, anything you pull out of retirement account is taxed as ordinary income. And then, of course, once you reach age 70 and a half, you have mandatory distributions. Starting out, they're low. But as you get older, I was with a client of ours that have been with me for, gosh, close to almost three decades now. They are now in their 90s and a very substantial retirement plan. And, you know, he has to take out a very large amount of money each year because he's in his 90s. The estate plan needed to be updated and the beneficiaries of the accounts needed reviewing. And there was no sort of disability insurance for Ed, which presented a serious threat to anybody's retirement because you're banking on the fact that you're going to be healthy all the way to the time you retire. And the budget didn't really allow too much for savings. What we figured at retirement, Ed and Lisa's Social Security would be roughly about $44,000. Lisa's pension and annuity income would be about $8,000. The investment income we calculated by going into a dividend paying program that would produce $3,000 or 3% a year, and then a balanced account for the 401k and gold that would be 3.2% in the program. So the grand total income would be close to $90,000 less a retirement budget would be $53,000. They would have a surplus of $36,700. However, when we took a look at this plan, the concerns prior to Ed's diagnosis with cancer, you know, what were they concerned about? Maximizing retirement income. The strategy would be delay Social Security until age 70 and Lisa would take spousal benefits. Number two, preserving income for the family. We signed up for disability insurance and also maximize health savings accounts. Paying for a college education, reducing discretionary expenses to free up that money, passing the legacy on to the heirs would involve updating their estate plan.
So now how did this change once the diagnosis of cancer came in on Ed's part?
Well, if the cancer gets worse, obviously we would have to review the estate plan and make sure the spouse is prepared. The impact of the current financial situation would increase cash position and use the health savings account. And then, you know, time off from work, depending on health, utilize the disability insurance, which allows up to 12 weeks of unpaid medical leave. And John, quite honestly, emotional implications. Make sure the family has strong support system, basically to follow up on the plan. So we have no idea what the ultimate outcome is going to be. Hopefully it will be resolved and Ed will remain healthy and live long into his retirement years. But it was something that, you know, here you start out with a plan, and 6 months into the plan, all of a sudden you're hit with something like this. So it just goes to show you that all of life's plans at some point in time end up getting altered. And so fortunately, there were steps taken in the planning process to prepare for this and then what the eventual outcome will be.
So a reminder that tomorrow, Dr. Wade Fowle will be with us on Lifetime Income, Safer Approaches to Retirement Income. So anything else, Jim, or do we just say goodbye and happy planning?
Goodbye and happy planning. And, you know, folks, really, once again, don't end up being one of those statistics, a part of the 43%. You know, if you're young starting out, there are a lot of free programs out there. There's robo-advisors. Establish a relationship. Start with a plan. And then understand that these numbers are going to change over the years. Over your working years, they're going to change. You might have a loss of income. Maybe one of you gets laid off, or you advance your career. You end up getting a promotion. You get a bonus. You know, you work for a company that has a great stock and you get stock options and they're worth a fortune. All these things can modify your plan over the years, but start somewhere. Start with a plan. Start with a number as a starting point, and then make sure it's realistic, and then add it and make it personal and put in your own inputs. When you want to retire, what your health prospects are, what is your realistic ability to save given your current expenses and your income. But start with the plan somewhere. The better off you're going to be, the earlier you start and having a plan. Well, in the meantime, as always, we're out of time here on Lifetime Income. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the program. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.